It's just a shame that they had relatively scruffy races, but it being Mercedes and them being quite good at making the best out of a bad situation, they still maximised their result. So I think they'll leave the weekend bitter, but fairly happy.
F1 circus rolled into the city of Lombardy this week for the Italian Grand Prix at the Temple of Speed track in Monza. Tune in as we discuss the ins and outs of the weekend, including whether Mercedes maximised points on a track that doesn't benefit the W14. And of course, Lewis Hamilton and George Russell's new contracts. Join me, Val Baines, on this episode of the Silver Arrows podcast as we discuss all the main talking points from the Italian Grand Prix. To help us do all of that, we have F1 journalist Adam Williams. Hello, Adam.
Hello.
We also have our in-house F1 tech head, Tom Fletcher. Hello, Tom. Hopefully elaborate more than Adam's hello there, Tom.
Yeah, hi there. It's good to be back. It feels like a long time over the summer break, but yeah, it's finally good. It's a good thing to have the racing back and let's continue for the rest of the year and hopefully bring Mercedes back into this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Adam, hope you're taking notes on that's how you do an introduction from Tom. All right. As always, we'll get to race day shortly, but as normal, we'll work our way through the weekend, starting with Friday. And Adam, you mentioned the best feeling in the car was in the first lap, which Hamilton said in FP1.
I did mention that. And yeah, he seemed to start off on a decent footing. I understand with more downforce, which obviously helps through the corners, but there are many high-speed sections. This is Italy. This is Monza, the theatre of speed. So lots of cars with skinny rear wings to get through the air, cut through the air that little bit quicker. And it's the sort of track that Mercedes have struggled at this year and would expect to struggle at. I know that in Spa, Belgium, that was a track where the car didn't quite perform. So Mercedes fans would have been heading into the weekend knowing that their drivers probably wouldn't be challenging for podiums, or, well, would they be challenging for the win? It's difficult, but anyway, yeah, they knew it would be tough.
Yeah, naturally with a circuit like Monza, you're looking to cut as much drag out the car as possible. You would have noticed that all of the teams are running really, really skinny rear wings, massively noticeably different from a visual aspect. But also another funny little point is that I did notice that most of the teams had taken off the little windscreens in front of the driver's steering wheels that normally, I don't know what that does, to maybe deflect stones or stop some air in entering the cockpit. But they're really taking as much unnecessary drag out the car as possible.
I actually found out what that did at the weekend. So it's to help with airflow so that the air doesn't get underneath the driver's helmet and kind of lift their neck up, because it can be quite uncomfortable. But from what I understand, Lewis hadn't been using it for a while. He's got like something to help, like attached to the helmet instead. And I imagine a lot of drivers went that way. People tend to follow what Lewis Hamilton does.
Well, yeah, I learned something new every day. That's thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. So normally they have like a little flick on the back of the helmet, don't they, or something like that. But yeah, that's really cool. So bring it back to Monza. It's always a trade-off between having a higher downforce setup and a lesser downforce setup to reduce the drag and help your straight line speed. And at Monza, that's really important. So basically what the teams will do, you'll see this quite a lot, is they'll run one car with a much lower downforce setup than another car. And what they're doing is trying to find out the sweet spot between the two and whether their simulations tie up with the data that they're getting and their lap time that they're getting. The thing is with higher downforce is you're trying to protect the tires in long runs. So the race pace is really dependent on downforce. And a lot of people ask me, even engineers at where I work, how does downforce protect tires? So I'm going to try and explain this. The easiest way to think about this is if you grab a pencil with a rubber on the end of it, and you press that down into the table with the rubber facing downwards. Now you can generate two forces quite easily. You've got a vertical load, which is pressing the pencil into the table, squashing the rubber, and you can generate a lateral load, which is sliding the pencil across the table. You notice when you slide it, you start getting balls of rubber come off, and that's key to this. So the harder I press down on with my vertical load, the harder it is to push the pencil across the surface of the table. That protects the tire. Whereas if I'm putting a lesser force down, I can now slide the pencil across the table and I'm damaging the tires. And that's the key to this. So by increasing the lateral load, you're effectively protecting the tire. You're stopping it from sliding. So then your management pace is faster than a slightly lower downforce setup, which is then impacting on your longer runs. You can make the tires last longer. And all of that then feeds into where you go with the downforce. It does get a bit more complicated in looking at how you bias the balance. So, for example, if you're putting more downforce on the car, but you have a more dominant axle, you're going to do more damage to that tire because you're now putting more lateral vertical load on that tire, and you're pressing it across or scrubbing it across the circuit. So it's a very fine balancing act between the two, but Mercedes opting to run the higher downforce setup on Lewis, or maybe that was Lewis's decision through Friday, it really didn't work for them in terms of one lap pace, or even I think they noticed that it wasn't even going to work out in the race pace. So yeah, reverting back or moving towards Russell's setup for FP3.
I don't know if you saw there, Tom, but when you mentioned the pencil, Adam and I were scrambling around where we are trying to find a pencil just so we can do what you just did there. But yeah, such a great explanation. Thank you so much for that, Tom.
Yeah, it's good to visualize what's going on, really. I find it helps. And please feel free to try it at home. It will help, I think, with everyone's understanding.
I imagine also, Tom, that the high track temperature would have made this even more of an effect. I think it was mid-40s, the temperature.
Yeah, so basically what that's doing is moving the tyres into the higher end of the temperature window. So if you think about rubber, once you start getting it hot, it starts to break away easier. So you're starting to degrade the tyre because the temperature is now higher. So yeah, that's what's going on there.
Who doesn't love tyre talk on the Silver Arrows podcast? So moving on to FP2, Tom, what happened in that session?
In FP1, there was a lot of Mercedes doing a lot of laps on the harder tyre because of the alternative tyre allowance that the teams were taking. They've taken two softs away from them, so that they're having to be really careful with what they use and how they space that out over the weekend. So in FP1, Mercedes were spending a lot of time on the hard tire, then moving into FP2 to see how the mediums would come into play, and then saving the softs for then FP3. But the thing is that it was very difficult to read what was happening because lots of teams were running different tires at different points. Mercedes didn't run the soft until the Saturday. So it was very difficult to read, and you couldn't really tell what was the ins and outs of everything that was happening here, other than the fact that Hamilton was running far too much downforce and was struggling in straight line speed compared to Russell.
Tom, do you think that the fact in hindsight now, which is, of course, a beautiful thing, do you think that the fact that Mercedes weren't running the softs on Friday meant that they had a disadvantage come qualifying three, which we'll discuss in a minute, I'm sure, because they didn't quite have the data for the soft tyres? And we know how Mercedes are so good at learning overnight for Saturday.
Possibly. But I don't think they had, particularly with Lewis anyway, they just didn't have the right setup for him. So they wouldn't have learned too much at all, really. in terms of the balance, how it feels on the soft. So choosing to save that for the Saturday was probably a good idea.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah.
Let's move on to FP3 then, Adam. So yeah, like Tom said, the team used the softs in that session.
Yeah, and it was looking more promising with Lewis third and George sixth, I believe. As I just mentioned, Mercedes do tend to get better overnight from Friday to Saturday, and I think it was something like 10 p.m. Lewis was leaving the track, signing a man's leg. Amongst other things I saw on social media. Don't you just love the Italian fans? But yeah, in three practice three, it did look a little bit more representative as to where Mercedes stood. Probably the third fastest team over the weekend. Maybe Albon getting in there at times, as we saw. But yeah, that probably showed their true pace over one lap especially, and foreshadowed what was to come, except the order was fairly different. Well, except the order swap between the two drivers, Hamilton and George.
Yeah, I just would like to pick up on a point of how maybe, again, we couldn't really read into FP3, mainly because of track evolution and the times that Mercedes started to do their low run or quali sim pace practice. Obviously, it's the same with every circuit. More running that happens, the track cleans up, lays rubber down, and the track naturally gets faster and faster and faster. And if teams are running low fuel when the track's at its fastest, it can make them appear like they have more pace in the car. So for me, they were always sat at the third fastest manufacturer all weekend. And I think it's just a case of damage limitation, really. We know that they're struggling with drag. So it was a little bit of a bogey track in that respect. So, yeah.
The other thing to consider is, yes, we know that Red Bull are down the road. Ferrari, they threw everything at this weekend, as we continued to hear from the coverage throughout the weekend. It's their home race. They wanted to do well. So they had fresh engines. They probably went even more aggressive with having completely new wings, and yeah, they were going for it, guns and blazing guns, and just trying to please the home fans, because that's basically what their focus is, getting the fans happy at the moment after quite a disappointing season to date. So they didn't really have anything to lose. So for Mercedes to only be behind Red Bull, who we know are dominant right now, and Ferrari, who we know were absolutely going for it, I think third on the road is not a bad position for them to be in. When we look back at the pace over the weekend, especially when we know how much Mercedes have compromised with the car and its kind of development over the year. And yeah, we know that they're hamstrung by the cost cap. So yeah, it's positive.
Yeah, all things considered, I think, yeah, Mercedes did their best as they could. But moving on to quali on Saturday, Hamilton qualified P8 in the race on Sunday and George Russell in P4. But Adam, how tight, we were discussing this off air, but how tight was the field in quali?
It was nuts. It was a couple of tenths dividing about six drivers plus. So and that is how Monza qualifying is. It's so crucial to be on pole in Monza, unless you're driving against Max Verstappen in a Red Bull this year, because it's even more important than around Monaco statistically. But then you've got to think about getting the right slipstream. You've got to think about traffic, and you've got to think about getting all the braking points right, because they are so crucial to the lap time. As most of the lap is full throttle. There's only 10 corners which are worth calling corners, and what corners they are, by the way. I love Monza. And as a result, there's very little input that the driver can make. So when those inputs come, it really does show. And Tom could probably explain better than I can. Hamilton and Russell, they had different driving styles, and it really told when we looked at the timings, with Russell qualifying fourth and Hamilton eighth. Do you want to take it away, Tom?
Yeah, for me, I think Russell has outperformed the car. He managed to pull together a mighty lap. I did notice that the build-up to qualifying, that Lewis is much better in sectors one and two, and particularly the braking zones. But then starts to lose it towards the end of the lap. So this Ascari chicane and Parabolica. One thing that was interesting is that as you feed the steering into the Parabolica, you're coming down gears. Russell was coming down his fifth and taking a little bit of a lesser speed into the apex, and then really focusing on the exit. Whereas Lewis was coming in a lot hotter, holding sixth gear. And it appears almost bogging the engine a little bit in comparison to Russell, who would come out and then gain down all the way down to the start finish line. And really, that's what all it came down to, that last corner in on their final laps of qualifying. But the thing is that because Lewis was so good in sectors one and two, that performance was sort of masked. So his slower sector three was sort of masked by his sector one and two, but then George on his last lap has got maybe a little bit more brave, maybe taking a bit more risk on the brake pedal and taking that little bit extra, which then brought him up and then passed Lewis. So yeah, really interesting comparison between the two of them there.
We talk about how the hot conditions are really impacting the tyres. Do you think that perhaps Lewis being stronger in the first and second sector made it more difficult to keep things going in the final sector, maybe the tyres had overheated? I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. One thing that is quite interesting here is that, you know, we normally talk about circuits being front or rear limited. Monza's sort of in the middle. It's neither nor, and it depends on the driver and then the setup as well. And that then correlates to how much energy you're putting into those tyres and how which axle is going to heat up first and how you bring them in. But I don't think that came into play here. I think it's just normally Lewis is quite good at saving the tyre until the final sector, whereas George maybe tends to struggle a little bit. So I don't think that the temperature had an impact on that lap time in particular, but maybe it's just I'm still unsure whether it's a setup thing or it's just something that Lewis missed and maybe he could have picked up if he went through George's data. Having said that, I think Lewis is pretty meticulous, so it could be something that he's chosen to help with the race pace, maybe that's just then hidden. But yeah, interesting comparison between the two of them.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting in that quali session. Also interesting on race day on the Sundays.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So George Russell finished P5 and Lewis Hamilton P6, which, as we were talking about earlier, it's probably the best we could have hoped for. Both drivers getting a 5-second penalty, which we'll speak about in just a second. But Adam, how do you think both drivers started in the race in Italy?
Well, Before I say that, can I just give a shout out to the Italian national anthem followed by the flyover? It's one of the moments of the season for me every single time, right? So rousing. And it's so against like everything F1's trying to stand for in terms of environmentally friendly, because I know that they ban flyovers, but the Italians don't listen to that. They just do it anyway. Always makes me laugh, but it feels like one of those, it's a guilty pleasure. That's what it is, the start of the Italian Grand Prix. But the start, that's the way to put it. Now, Russell nearly got into third position at the start, and he was very unfortunate that the Ferrari had so much high speed and Leclerc was able to defend going around Curva Grande. So George couldn't make that Grande move, if I quote the great commentator David Croft. He kind of took advantage of the fact that Leclerc was breaking behind his teammate Sainz, who was obviously leading the Italian Grand Prix in a Ferrari. You don't want to go into the back of him. So he was probably a little bit more careful, and George nearly made it work. And that could have changed the race a lot for him, it could have given him a potential opportunity to get down the road and not get in trouble with the Alpine later on and everything like that. But it could have changed the whole fight up front between Verstappen and the Ferraris. Anyway, we're not talking about them. We're talking about Mercedes. What happened with Lewis? It was not the greatest of starts. He lost a position, went down to ninth, but that is to be expected. He was on the hard tyres, whereas most of the field, other than I think a couple of the other drivers, were on medium tyres. Now, the idea here is that Hamilton lasts a bit longer, waits for everyone to go into the pits, accepts that he drops back, but he can then do a nice sprint to the end, not worrying about tyres and managing them, just pulling off some moves. The thing is, it's quite difficult to make a move stick around Monza, even though it's high speed and it produces great racing. Don't get me wrong. There is a difference between great racing and easy to overtake. And Mercedes obviously trusted Lewis to be able to make those moves and make them stick. He made most of them stick, as you say, and a little bit of a collision with Oscar Piastri. It's obviously even hard for a 7-time world champion to judge the 2-meter width of a Formula One car at plenty of speed. I don't know if it's 100 miles an hour they were braking from, more than that probably, but yeah. So not the best of starts from Lewis, but nearly the best of starts from George Russell.
Yeah, for me, George drove a pretty good race. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but yeah, holding his position at the start was really good. And then running 16 massively defensive laps against Perez, I thoroughly enjoyed. Obviously, he got a bit lucky, I think, cutting the chicane, turn one chicane. I think if Perez didn't outbrake himself and also send himself off the track as well, he probably would have got another penalty, if I'm honest, particularly if Perez was waiting to turn in. And yeah, obviously couldn't do that because George has also outbraked himself. But apart from that, it was an impressive drive, to be honest. They're boxing on lap 19, I think, for the harder tyre, and then just had a quiet race. But maybe not a quiet race. Coming out the pit lane, wasn't it? He ended up outbraking himself with Ocon on the outside of him, forcing them both off. That's then what he's got the 5-second penalty for. I don't think that he necessarily was doing that on purpose or trying to fight the position for Ocon. I think he's just come out on a cold set of hard tyres, gone to brake and locked up, and then sailed both of them off. But yeah, it wasn't really needed at that point of the race. And then obviously he gets there in the 5-second penalty for that. But then after that, maybe settles down a little bit and pumps in the laps and brings that fifth place home. Lewis, on the other hand, like Adam said, he's starting on the harder tyre. I just want to add into that the fact that one advantage that you do have is that you can wait for a safety car. And in this case, that didn't happen. But if it did happen, it would have helped him up the order a lot quicker. Because then you can, yeah, obviously have the cheap stop under the safety car. Coming home P6 is probably the best thing or the best result Mercedes could have hoped for, considering the pace of everyone else.
And you're right, that was probably the best that they could have done. George's penalty, like you say, could have been avoided, but it didn't matter. He was 20 seconds ahead of Lewis by the end of the race. I want to also talk about how good, like, yes, the Oscar Piastri move wasn't good, but the move that Lewis did on Alex Albon, going round the inside to outside to get the inside line for turn two, that was like he did in 2007 to Kimi Raikkonen, rolling back those rookie years. And it's also what Verstappen tried to do to Carlos Sainz, but Carlos Sainz defended it really well. Mercedes fans, did any of you think that Verstappen could have bailed out like he did this year, a couple of years ago? I think the answer I can hear is yes. Sorry, I just had to get that in there. I quite like how it's difficult to overtake it. The first sector of Monza is so good in terms of drivers kind of having battles lap by lap and trying to work each other out, force each other into mistakes. I felt like a lot of people did go over the runoff area a little bit too much for my liking, but you'd rather that than them ending up on top of each other. So yeah, you got to take the rough with the smooth, I suppose.
Just to bring it back to Lewis quickly, I think again it took him a bit of time to get that Monza racecraft in. Obviously, having that collision with Piastri definitely deserved the 5-second penalty. He just totally misjudged where he was. Having said that, it is easy to do, though. It's when you're picking a braking spot, you're looking to the left and the car is naturally drifting that way anyway because it's embedded in you to open up the corner. But yeah, he needs to appreciate that there is a car on the outside and yes, does deserve that penalty. What I did like from Lewis was how he was reading the different performances in the other cars. So you had the straight line speed of the Williams, and then the slower straight line speed of the McLarens. And it was really good how he built the moves up. So using his tire delta, because he's on the mediums, everyone else is on the hards, he can come out of turn one, duck out of the turbulent air, get the traction, and then gives him it allows him to pull alongside, and then he can make the move down into three. Sorry, it's four, isn't it? Yep, 1, 2, 3, 4, yep. Down into the next chicane. One thing then, once he dispatched the McLarens, he was on the back of a much, much faster in a straight line, Williams, which made that move not possible. And instead, I've seen it before with Lewis, and I have got a bit upset before about how he would try the same move, realize it doesn't work, but still try it. So he came up to the back of Albon, did the same thing out of the exit of turn two, getting the drive down on Albon. But of course, the much superior straight line speed of the Williams allowed him to just pull out of the move. And then he was way behind for the braking zone. He then, on the next lap, spotted that and then got his elbows out and nailed a perfect move down the inside. Judged the space perfectly. Albon had to then give up the place. And I think that was one of the best moves of the entire weekend, if I'm honest. It was so precise. Gave Albon enough room, but was firm enough to then close the door into two. So yeah, that was really impressive.
Yeah, the key thing with that move is that he got his car ahead of Albon before Albon could think about cutting him off for turn two. He'd already gone around the outside of him. And that's what Verstappen wasn't able to do with Carlos Sainz. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Also, fair play for Lewis to go straight over to Oscar, shake his hand and apologise for the move straight after the race. So, yeah, that was good of him there, showing his sporting side.
With everything that happened this weekend, Adam, do you think that was all part of Hamilton's strategy for this race weekend at Monza?
I think he probably wouldn't have gone for the hard tyres initially if he'd have had a better starting position. He'd have been looking to be a bit more aggressive like those ahead of him ended up doing on the medium tyres. That was the optimal strategy. But we've seen Lewis do it before where he's been a few positions down and he's tried that and have been quite unlucky, actually, I think, to the Netherlands just the weekend before, where it rained on the first lap and that wrote off Hamilton's chances. So I'm not sure it was L plan all weekend to do just that, but maybe that is always a card that Hamilton and Mercedes can play because they know he is so good at managing those tyres and coming back and having nice, clean racecraft and decisive moves most of the time. So I wouldn't say it was a plan as much as it was the ace that they have up their sleeve because they've got a good driver in Lewis. I'm not sure as many people could have turned a result into sixth place, which was the best he could have got that weekend. I could see a lot of people making a mistake, having a crash or just getting stuck in traffic and bogged down by it all. So, yeah, I think it was more Lewis giving them that option.
For me, I think that strategy for Lewis really allowed him to get the sixth place, if I'm honest. I think he would have really struggled starting on the mediums, mainly because the Mercedes was just too slow in a straight line to make any decent moves on the brakes. So what they had to do was get this tyre delta that allowed them to launch out of the slow speed quicker and then negate the fact that they have more drag. And what will happen is that extra little boost that they have on the exit then gives them a bit more straight line speed just to get onto the back of other cars and then get the tow. And that's what's allowed Lewis to then make make up the positions or make up positions on track, should I say, rather than boxing for the undercut or things like that. So I think they nailed that for Lewis.
You're right there. And I think adding on to that, his overtake on Alonso after he came out of the pits, that was crucial because we know how tricky it is to get past Fernando Alonso, who is the sort of person, I might have made this comparison before because I always think about it. He's the sort of person that would go out on a run along the Thames in London, and if he sees a cyclist behind him, see how many meters he can block the cyclist for. That's the sort of bloke Fernando Alonso is, and I quite like it. It's the inner, what's the polite word?
Competitive racer.
That might be a politer way of putting it, but yes, I wanted to say other words, but yeah, the inner kind of that we all kind of wish we sometimes could do, but Alonso does it, and it's all right because it's Fernando Alonso. So the fact he got past Fernando so quickly was important, but also he was really good at not sprinting right onto the back of the McLarens and Albon, because they were already fighting amongst themselves. So he could let those tyres settle in, and they came to him almost by being slower through their battle. And that allowed them to slip into his clutches, and he delivered.
I just wanted to bring up something Toto Wolff said after the race when speaking about Max's 10-win race record. Tom, what do you think of this? Because it was blown up all over social media. He said, quote unquote, for Wikipedia, nobody reads it anyway. Speaking about that 10 race win, do you think he's rattled? Do you think he's sort of playing more than he cares to admit?
Of course he does. I think he wants those records, of course. And I think he probably feels a bit bitter about it, to be honest. It's like anything. All of these people are fiercely competitive, and if your team hasn't got that record, you're going to be upset about it. And I think he's probably just shrugging it off as I'm not bothered. But in actual fact, yeah, he is thinking that maybe I wish my team was that. But we'll see. Maybe one day.
Yeah, I think you're right. He'd much prefer to be talking about it being him, and I'm sure it would be more than Wikipedia if it was Mercedes and Lewis or George doing it. I think that was an interesting thing, actually. I don't know if it was the plan by Mercedes to give Red Bull and Ferrari as little oxygen as possible this weekend. This weekend, we all knew going in was going to be about Ferrari and about Max getting the 10 in a row and setting that record. But Mercedes had comments like Toto's. They had comments like Hamilton that we'll discuss shortly about Verstappen's teammates not being as competitive as his. And then, of course, you've got the driver contracts being announced with the extensions, both of them. Of course, organically, that might well have happened with the contract being signed this week, from what I understood, even though it was agreed before. Lewis only signed it this week, but it is interesting how all these things kind of took away the media coverage and interest from these other big stories that you would have gone into the weekend expecting to talk about. It's just a shame that they had relatively scruffy races, but it being Mercedes and them being quite good at making the best out of a bad situation, they still maximise their results. So I think they'll leave the weekend bitter but fairly happy, even though Toto said you don't really want to be celebrating a fifth or sixth position. And that's the thing that will be annoying him the most, not necessarily Red Bull and Verstappen doing so well, but the fact that Mercedes aren't able to challenge and stop this run. That will be the thing that's eating away at Toto the most. And yeah, he's a winner. He's that's what he does. And when he's not winning, this is how he is. That's how most people are in this competitive industry. And that's a good thing. Like Christian Horner loved to have a good snipe at whoever was at the top. And I'm sure in the future, if Christian Horner's not winning, that's what he'll do again. It's part of Formula One, and we love the politics, we love the drama, and that's what it is. It's a soap opera, isn't it?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why we watch it. You mentioned that the contract extension there, Adam. Do you think if Abu Dhabi 2021 hadn't happened and Lewis Hamilton was in possession of an 8th world title, do you think he would have retired by now? Do you think he's hunting? Do you think he wants that 8th world title to say, hands down, I am the best F1 driver ever?
I think it's without question that he wants that 8th title. It means even more than it did before. And that meant a hell of a lot, because it would have been a statement championship, to say the least. Whether he signed the contract because he needs that 8th, yes, I think so. Would he have retired after Abu Dhabi 2021 if he'd won? I know Martin Brundle said that some people in the paddock believe that. It's very easy to say that in hindsight. I think Lewis would have continued to be hungry, and it probably would have been a shock to the system, but less of a horrible shock, because he'd already got that 8th title. So maybe he would have seen it as a long-term project to get Mercedes back to the front and maybe been in less of a rush about it. But yeah, I think he will want to see drastic improvements in Mercedes' car next year. We know he was talking about the fact that they weren't listening to him when they designed this year's car, I suspect, because they felt they were going in the right direction through George's win, which was the last win that wasn't a Red Bulls. So yeah, I think next year is crucial, and he would have been making Toto fully aware of that, which is why Toto doesn't want to be losing again. at this point next year.
And sticking on Hamilton, he's had some interesting comments in an interview that I saw a few days ago, Tom, where he said Max's teammates haven't been as good as his teammates. What do you think of those comments there, Tom?
It's a valid point. I think people may take it in the wrong way and think he's being cocky about this situation. I don't know how I feel, really. What part of me wants him to keep that inside and you know, stop that leaking out into the media? But then the other half of me is like, yes, okay, you need to be more vocal about this and send those words to Verstappen and try and get inside his head. Neither there or the other. I think I'm leaning towards the fact that you should keep those inside for now. I think it was a bit almost hot-headed, showing his frustration maybe a little bit. For me, I think I would have preferred him to keep quiet about that.
Yeah, it's unlike Lewis because he usually talks about doing his talking on the track. But like you say, Tom, he's frustrated. Now, who of Hamilton and Verstappen's teammates, who would you say are the top five? I think we've got to agree Alonso's the best of the lot. Then I'm thinking it's probably going to be a Rosberg and Button. What order you put those in depends on yourself. I know a lot of people would put Button ahead of Rosberg, but I think Rosberg, in terms of a challenging teammate, we know how mentally challenging he was. So I would probably put him in terms of Hamilton being able to overcome that above beating Button. And then 4 and 5, it's difficult because you could quite easily put Daniel Ricciardo there still. It depends whether he's in his prime or not. And then I'd probably only just put Bottas above. Oh, and then there's George Russell. He's maybe an unknown quantity at this point. I don't know what you think, but I think Bottas is ahead of Perez. And that's simply because Bottas had better qualifying pace. Perez maybe had better race pace, but he's so far behind that he's not able to do much with it, whereas Bottas could win occasionally from pole position. And the thing about teammates is that, well, it's maybe unfair for Hamilton to make these comparisons because no one can ever say you're wrong because no one's ever had the same teammates. The teammates that you have make you the driver that you are. So Hamilton, having been with Alonso from the start, made him the beast that he is in terms of being able to cope with the pressure from day one. And the fact that he was able to overcome that was impeccable. And I think Rosberg was the next kind of big lesson learned for Lewis in terms of growing from a young man to probably the legend that we all know, and perhaps this kind of negative experience that he had in Abu Dhabi, followed by the challenges of the poor car and a young up and coming teammate in George Russell, is Lewis Hamilton's third challenge in Formula One. And in life they say that you have three peaks. Maybe this is Hamilton's third peak. Can he climb it? We'll find out in the next 2 years, but I think it's exciting.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there, Adam. Particularly what you're saying about how you are your teammate, effectively. I've noticed with George that he's really, really pushing Lewis, and I think this has woken him up, if I'm honest. And I'd even rate Russell up there with Alonso, to be honest. Yeah, he's not proven, but the way he drives Lewis is so impressive. Maybe not so much at the moment, but you know, you can see his performance is coming back. And I think the same situation is going to start happening with Verstappen now. with a slightly lesser teammate, he's going to, he might become a bit laid back a little bit, and not start to not perform at his absolute peak, which is bad news as soon as other teams start getting the performance in. So yeah, it is, you are made by your teammate. I love that. It's so true, because it is the identical car, and it's the car that you're effectively racing the hardest and the one that you want to be ahead of no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like we said, that the fact that he is not necessarily in a winning car, but he is in a car up against George Russell, is perhaps allowing him to train in the shadows and become even stronger. God, the grid must fear that, for when he comes back into title contention, hopefully. And perhaps that will catch Verstappen on the back foot, as comfortable and serene as he might look now.
I'm going to have to be the bad guy here and end this podcast. Tom, Adam, as always, thank you so much for joining me here on the Silver Arrows podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Balf.
Pleasure as always.
And that's all we have time for this week. A massive thank you to Tom and Adam for joining us. Their social media handles are in the show notes. And thanks to you for listening. Do remember to follow us on Twitter at MerckF1Pod and hit that follow button in your podcast app. If you're enjoying these episodes and feeling extra kind, drop us a review and share this episode with anybody who you think may enjoy it. We'll see you soon.